Then there is the tremendous ministry of hospitality. Do you know that hospitality is mentioned in Scripture 5 times as a command? 5 times it's commanded. One time it's in Romans chapter 12, verse 13. Remember what Romans 12 is about? How does it begin? I beseech you, brethren, I urge you, I beg you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. And then, and he keeps going, okay, what does that look like to live that kind of life? And he keeps going, and down there, and you get to verse 13, he says, showing hospitality. Living a committed Christian discipled life means showing hospitality. Now you might say, I am not a very good cook. No, it doesn't say showing good culinary skills. It's showing hospitality. Now, I've done a study on the word hospitality, and it's a fascinating word. It's a robust word. It's not for people who just like to sit around and play pinochle or euchre, you know, with their friends. That's not what it's not, you know, some places up in Canada they talk about it as entertaining. Are you going to entertain the preacher this week, you know? That means are you going to bring him over and feed him? It's not entertainment. Hospitality, you break it down into the two Greek words. The first one is philos. You'd have heard of eros. Philos is brotherly love, okay, friendly type love, okay? So it has something to do with love. That xenos, which is the last part, it's philos xenios, is the word translated hospitality. Xenos, you know what xenophobia is? It's fear of strangers. Xenos means strangers. So hospitality means philos, love of xenos, strangers. It's love of strangers. And the way it's used, it means bringing people outside of your circle into your circle. Okay, you know, if you want to just have a relaxing afternoon, and just enjoyable, hang around, you know, you invite people in your circle, right? I mean, there's a guy at our church, his name is Doug, and he's a woodworker, he's one of our deacons, and I like working with wood. Something about it, we just click. On a Sunday morning, you know, the two of us get together, we could talk all day long and never have something we couldn't talk about. We took a trip to a retreat once where I was speaking at. Hey, Doug, you want to come along for a ride? Just keep me awake. Well, yeah, sure, I'll do it. It was a 6-hour drive. We nonstop had nothing we couldn't talk about, you know? Other people you don't connect with, you don't spend as much time with. Hospitality means you open up your life to other people who normally aren't there into your life. Obviously, doing it at the house, those of you that have the ability and the desire to be able to bring them into your house, feed them a meal, sit around and talk, maybe watch the game. My wife and I were on our honeymoon. This is many moons ago, and our conviction was, is we still, when we travel, we just want to fellowship with God's people. And we kind of got to this one place. It was in the East Coast somewhere, and we had this little directory of churches that are similar to ours, and we kind of looked, oh, there's one nearby here meeting in a Grange Hall. I thought, well, this is going to be kind of like a backwards rural community, you know. So we went anyway, and there was maybe a handful of people there at the Lord's Supper, and then a few more came in for the preaching service. There was a young couple, maybe our age, a little older, that we started connecting with. We'd never met them before in our lives. They asked us, would we like to come to their house afterwards for dinner? And they live near a lake. They've got a boat. We could spend the afternoon skiing together. They never met us before in our lives. Now, we were on our honeymoon, so we politely declined, but I thought it was so cool, you know. That is hospitality. It's hospitality when you know of a drunk who starts coming in, and like happened one day in our fellowship in Rochester, and I mentioned something about Paul, and he gets up, Paul was a woman hater, and he starts going on, and he was obviously in a stupor, but he had known enough about the Bible to know that, you know, what some of those issues are, and a couple of our guys kind of went over there and quieted him down, and afterwards, one of our guys took him out to lunch. That's hospitality. He opened up his life, brought him in, even though he stunk of alcohol. And this guy kept coming back. And every time he walked in the building, we all the guys got together because the women were very, you know, he was kind of middle-aged, maybe 40-ish, a Vietnam, probably around 50, he was a Vietnam vet, and the women started a little, you know, because he'd walk around the hallways and our kids were there, you know. So the guys, you know, realized we got a problem. We can't kick this guy out and forbid him to come. And so we made an agreement that whenever he stepped foot in the door, one of our guys would always be with him wherever he went. It was interesting. I got to meet him one day, took him out to lunch, and he was a very intelligent guy. We got started talking about, you know, Russian literature, which he likes, which I have enjoyed at times, and we talked about Crime and Punishment and, you know, War and Peace, and he's read all these things. Very intelligent guy. Another guy went and bought him a bunch of tomato juice, which he really liked, and some other food. He lived in a car behind some factory, and there was a relationship started building. And it turns out he had trusted Christ at one time in his life. Just wasn't able to help it. Somehow his lifestyle, he wasn't able to get it together, and one day he got hit by a car and he died. But there was hospitality. It made me think of that other verse in Hebrews. When you show hospitality, you may be entertaining angels without being aware of it. And I think Myrne was one of those angels God sent in our life to teach us how to love. So philoxenios, showing a love of strangers. It might be just bringing them into your life. You're going out with some friends, including the person that's not part of your circle, including them with you. And there may be a time when that person says, "You're always including me. I wonder if you can help me." And then finally, there's the visit in the home. Don't negate that. I've been kind of putting it down because that's the stereotype. There's times I've been in people's homes when you begin to understand really what's going on. They're more comfortable on their turf, especially with new attenders or people that are sick and shut in. Isn't there some place in the Bible where somebody says, I was sick and you came to me, I was in prison, you visited me? Jesus said that in Matthew's gospel. You know, so we begin acting like Jesus. Now, one last thing before we have some discussion, and that is developing a plan for the church. Developing a plan for the church. It's easy with people doing it and here and there. And I don't have anything written on your notes here for that, but it's very simple. We did this with the elders in our church where we took the total number of family units that would conveniently in our phone book. And at that time, we had about 108. Let's just round it off to 108 because the math works a little better here. And there was four elders, two of us. One was retired, and there was me. I was in full-time ministry. So we counted ourselves in terms of time as two. So Doug, he was kind of just two, and I counted. So we considered there were six of us. And we took 108 and divided it by six. Oh, I guess I do have this on here. We took 108 family in the congregation, divided it by the number of us elders. Okay, six of us. And guess what? That works out to 18 family units per elder. Simple little plan. We wanted to make sure that we were going to cover everybody, that everybody in the congregation would have at least once a year an elder that would pay attention to them, focus, have a pastoral moment with the whole family. Okay? So we divided it by 18, by six, and we come up with 18 units, which meant that if each elder does 1.5, excuse my precise math here, you can apply it. If each elder does 1.5 pastoral events per month, the whole church can be covered in 1 year. Now, elders are busy. That's another thing I hear where I go. Churches that have biblical eldership, which is what we're trying to promote through biblical eldership resources, one of the biggest struggles that men have that are secularly employed, not retired, they're secularly employed, is their time is at a premium. And when they think visitation, a lot of guys go, oh, guilt starts descending, you know, pressure and stress, I'm not meeting up to expectations. But anybody can find time to make 1.5 visits a month. What one couple did to us back when our family was young, one older couple, their kids were grown, called us up one day and says, hey, we wanted to see if you guys wanted to go down to the Lang Village, it's a period village where everybody's dressed up and just kind of tour around it. And I'm thinking, well, we'll have to find a babysitter for our kids. No, we want your kids to come along too. So they took my wife and our kids, and they took us down there. We had a wonderful day. Our kids loved it. We had a great time connecting with them. They were showing interest in us. That meant a lot to us. And so having a personal pastoral event can involve both you and your spouse. It might mean you men, you might connect with a guy and have coffee with him, and your wife might connect with his wife at some level. But see, it can be done. You know, what a terrible thing is for anybody to go away and say, hey, you know, I've been here for a year and no one's ever called me, wanted to get together with me. Personal pastoral eldership shepherding can make a big difference.